Yeah, the calling has a commitment associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why I chose Holden to talk about these things is because of what I consider the special people that come here. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the people that I've met here are concerned. A lot of times they're also willing and able to take responsibility and leadership. That's not true in most of the situations that a person finds himself in a community which is so diverse in parts of the country and diverse in background. And so that's that makes it a very special place. And I felt that that I needed to provide people with this information because I think it's very important for our future and for not just the United States. That's another thing that you'll learn about me if you get to know me very well, is I don't really think about just our country. And I was going to mention this last time, but the other thing that I would ask you to think about, and I believe that all of you probably have done this, but what's your vision? How do you see the future? How do you see the present? What's your hope? What's your hope for the United States? What's your hope for the world? Do you have any kind of vision for the interaction of the United States with the other countries of the world? Kind of general things.
Do you want to feel?
Sure.
People.
Yeah.
That's where it's at. I battle governments, I battle every other system. People is the only thing that we can really deal with.
And would you see us then, you know, when you say that, I think I agree with that, and there's a whole bunch of things that you can do. I mean, you can actually go to the different parts of the country, different parts of the world now, and see those people. You can go to South America, you can go to Europe, you can go to Japan, you can go all over the place. But even more than that, that's expensive for a lot of people. One of the crazy things, one of the fantastic things that's happened is that we've developed this incredible communication system, which is only going to get better. And so if I want to communicate with somebody in South America, in Brazil, if I want to communicate with somebody in Germany or Japan, I can fax that information to them. And they can get it within a few minutes. Well, let me introduce myself. I'm Glenn Mogelson. I'm from Los Alamos National Laboratory. I have been involved in energy research, fusion energy research, for about 15 years. Los Alamos is your national resource. It's a resource of many scientists, about 3,000 physicists, and about 5,000 scientists, including physicists and chemists and biologists, a whole assortment of people involved in many different areas of research, including nuclear weapons research, by the way. But in addition to that, biology, DNA structuring, energy research in almost every area of energy. My other backgrounds are in astrophysics. I was initially an astrophysicist before I got involved in energy research back in 1976. Tonight we're going to be talking about energy resources. And well, I'm sure that you probably wonder, you know, what is the car? The subtitle is, what kind of a car are you going to drive in the next century? As you would probably guess, I can't answer that question entirely. What I can do is suggest to you that it's probably going to have to be different than the one you have now, and that there are some possibilities that are already being examined. And there's many possibilities. That's one of the things that surprised me. The other thing I want to say is that I'm not an expert in this field. My expertise is in fusion energy. I do research in that area. I talked about that yesterday. I'm doing and involved in designing experiments and interpreting experiments in inertial confinement fusion. This area is something that I've had to study on my own, and I have some knowledge of it, and I'm going to give you that knowledge, but it's up to you to take what I give you and proceed to other areas. To help you do that, I would highly recommend that you, if you have a chance, to look at this particular book. Now, this is the Interterm Report that came from our government. This is from the Department of Energy. And it deals with our energy, all aspects of it. Economic, pollution, everything that you can possibly imagine about our energy situation is in this book, and it has references. The final report, this is an Interterm Report, it was published in April of 1990. The final report does not have references, so this is actually a better report. And it really is not a strategy. What it is a compilation of information from people from all over our country, both written and verbally. Most of the information that I have, or I would say that, most of it comes from this report. If that's too much, that's almost 400 pages. I would recommend this. This is the summary of that report. This just came out within the last couple of months. And so it's a summary of what President Bush and what his committees believe should be the directions of our country in the energy field, and very quick reason why. And I'll make this available. I'll leave it out in the hall. If you want to, kind of a general overview of the energy situation, I would recommend looking at Time Magazine. This came out in April of 1991. It's actually a fairly good article. I have to be careful a lot of times with these articles, because a lot of times the magazines will bias an article in a particular direction. But this is actually pretty good, and I recommend reading it to get a kind of a feeling for what our energy situation is. This is another document that I'll leave out there. For those of you that are concerned about nuclear waste, this looks at nuclear waste in detail and talks about the problems associated with it and how you would dispose of it. Compares nuclear waste and waste from coal. This is biased, by the way. The person who wrote this was angry at the American people and their attitude about nuclear waste. And so it's biased from that standpoint. But saying that, it still has a lot of good information in it and very useful information. if you don't want to go through all of the energy strategy, these are certain sections of it that I thought people would be interested in. Our nation right now needs to be more involved in research. This tells you why. And you probably, some of you probably are aware of this, but we have a problem in our science education. I don't know what your school systems are like, but we have a real problem, and that's known by all the scientists in our country, at least almost everyone that I've talked to. We have a real problem. This talks about the problem and some things we might be able to do. This again is out of the energy strategy. This was part of the document that George Bush asked for. The final thing is a technology transfer. Now this is a subtle thing. I'm sure that all of you are aware that Japan and Korea and other countries in Europe now are making automobiles and instruments that are better than our own. Why is that? Part of the problem that we have is that we create ideas and prototypes, but we don't go that next step. We don't get into the manufacturing stage. And so we have a problem with technology transfer from the national laboratories to industry, for example. And we're working on trying to do something about that. But you should be aware of that. That's a real problem in our country right now that we need to deal with. So that's a long introduction to a bunch of material. What I'd like to do now is ask you some questions. Ruth, give me an example of an energy resource that we have.
Waterfalls.
Hydroelectric power, right? That's waterfalls is an example of that. Somebody else?
Solar power?
What's another thing?
Geothermal?
Something else?
Grain.
What?
Grain.
What?
Grain.
Grain. Ethanol? Okay. Ethanol. Something else?
Coal.
Wind. Okay. What's another thing?
Wood.
Oil.
Garbage.
Garbage.
Biomass.
Wind.
Wind. Yeah.
Wave energy.
What?
Wave energy.
Wave energy?
Yes.
Yeah, that's an energy. I don't think we've tapped it yet, but that's an energy. Yes.
Currents
what else?
In the ocean.
What?
Currents in the ocean, like the Gulf Stream.
Okay.
Bay of Fundy has. Haven't they done that project? Hasn't it ever been completed? That's research project.
So we all have a good feeling for what the different energy sources are, I think. How about natural gas? Okay. That's a pretty common thing. What I want to do is talk about, as we've already begun talking about what the energy resources are, but how are they used? I want to go into that a bit. And where are they used? Now, hydroelectric power is, where is hydroelectric power?
Northwest.
Okay, Northwest, right? Washington uses a lot of it. And what are the energy sources for the future? Let's talk about the, well, let me show you something. I'm not going to read this. I just want to show this to you for a second. I don't know how many of you saw this. This is a statement by George Bush in July of 1989. I'll step back for a moment and let you look at that. The point is that the president is very concerned about our energy situation. And what to do is actually a very complex problem, as you will see as we proceed. But he's very concerned. The situation in the Middle East was an example of why he's concerned. It's a very unstable situation for our country. And we need to do something about it. And there's all kinds of different directions to go, but they all have problems associated with them. Is that enough? So let's go back for a moment. How are they used? Okay, in transportation, what do you use?
Gasoline.
Gasoline. Right. What else do we use in transportation?
Diesel.
That's
electricity.
Pretty much like gasoline.
Natural gas.
Electricity.
How much?
Very little.
Yeah. Okay.
Propane.
What?
Propane.
Okay. Propane. How much?
Not very much.
Okay. Why do you say that?
I suppose because the size of tank that you have to have, and you can't get that many miles and so forth.
Yeah, how many propane stations do you see?
Yeah, well, that's
okay. that's an easy thing to say. Somebody said natural gas, right? Okay, how much natural gas?
Very little.
Yeah. Okay, so from what you said, how many of you think we use, what is our primary transportation energy source? Yeah. And what would you guess? It's about how much? 95%? No, it's higher than that. Okay. Now, how is it used?
Indiscriminately.
We drive to work with it, right? That's an obvious thing. How about other things? Anybody in farming? Yeah. What do you use for your fuel?
Well, for all the machinery.
Use gas.
Use gas, right?
Okay. So what does that mean? Suppose that gasoline prices were as high as they were in Europe, $4 a gallon. Okay. How about other areas where they're used? Flying, transportation, just about. You know, not only in our cars, but in the planes,
boats.
Everything, boats, you name it. We use it. How about Holden? Tell me, what are the energy sources for Holden right now?
Hydroelectric.
Okay, what are the backup sources?
Diesel.
That's right. Where are they? Where's the diesel? Where's it located?
Down the land.
They're in tanks, right? Underneath the ground. Okay, how about other sources? Who's been here during the winter?
Wood.
Okay. So wood, diesel, and hydroelectric power are the main sources of energy here. And gasoline, that's right, for transportation. Thanks. Well, let me show you some figures now so that you have some feeling for what the world situation is. I don't have a pointer, so forgive me. One of the interesting things about our country, well, let me point out what this is. This is a measure of the amount we have here. These are the different countries. And what you're looking at is gas, oil, and coal to give you a feeling for where we are as a country. You can see that as far as gas and oil are concerned, we have some, but not a lot. Our real resource is coal. In fact, we have more coal than any other country listed up here. Now, the Middle East is no surprise. They have gas, but they also have a lot of oil. The Soviet Union has a lot of gas and it has a lot of coal, but not very much oil. And in fact, the Middle East and Mexico and some other countries are the dominant countries for oil. And you can see that as far as fossil fuels are concerned, really the area that we have a lot of resource is coal, not oil. Well, what is our country doing in terms of its oil imports? This is an example of how much oil we're using. This is the domestic generation. This is the amount of import. And you can see it's probably about 40% that we're importing right now. The reality of our oil situation is that most people believe that it will peak by the year 2000, that is the oil production that we have, and then it will decline. And I had a graph of that I showed last week. And within 100 years, probably 50 years, that we will have very little if it's continued to use the way it is now. And you can see why. I mean, how many of you, those of you that are older, think about, well, if you've come to this area, think about what it was like in Seattle 50 years ago. What it was like in Camino Island, or any of the other places that you've been to. Now, I think there's some exceptions in some of the Midwestern part of the United States, but every other place that you go to, for me, even, old, tremendous population growth, right? Houses everywhere, and so, that kind of growth cannot be sustained with our fossil fuel of oil. Now coal, as you saw from the earlier graph, we have a lot of coal. And I'll talk about that a little bit later. How about natural gas? We don't import very much natural gas. This has happened to me a number of times. But you can see very little of it's imported. And hopefully that will stay that way. The problem is that we don't have a lot of natural gas either. It's kind of in the same situation that oil is. But it's not being used very much right now. And one of the ways that we might use it is in transportation. And I'll mention that later. I'll just give you an example of that. How about coal? This gives you an example of how it's used, too. Coal. You can see that there's a slope. Everybody know what a slope is? If I draw a line like this, it's increasing. Our coal use is increasing. My next talk, next week, will deal with what are the risks. Most of you, I think, have some ideas, some feelings, emotions associated with nuclear waste. But you probably don't have any emotion associated with driving your car. What I like to do is help you think about that a little bit better, a little bit more clearly. Maybe you should have an emotion about driving your car. And maybe you should be concerned a lot more than we are about burning coal and burning oil and burning natural gas, although natural gas is a pretty clean source. This is nuclear power. And as most of you know, there has been very little reactor development in the nuclear power industry for about 5 or 10 years because Of all the questions associated with safety, with the nuclear waste, with the accidents that have occurred, the one in Russia, and the Three Mile Island accident. So there's a lot of ill feeling about nuclear energy. This, by the way, is fission energy. And I'll talk about the difference between fission and fusion in a little bit.
What does PLEX?
PLEX means plant life extension. Actually, thank you for asking that question, because how many of you have a nuclear power plant near you? Raise your hand. Okay. One of the issues that you're going to be addressing in the near term is whether or not to extend the lifetime of the plant. Okay, the lifetime of a plant, as I understand it from the documents I've read, is 40 years. And you can bet you that they're going to ask to extend it to 70. Okay. So if you're concerned about that, questions about that, get into it. Find out what the issues are for extending it. I don't know what the issues are myself. And so if you're near a nuclear plant, that's something you should think about. Now, if they're extended, what this graph implies is that the nuclear energy is going to supply us energy for a much longer period of time than if you don't extend the lifetime. And I'll talk about the risks associated with nuclear energy in my next talk. How about renewable energy sources? A lot of people have asked me about solar energy. And one of the amazing things about the document is that solar energy is not discussed very much. I believe the reason for that is that we still don't know how to use it in what I would call a simple way. That is, and why is that? Why is this a problem? I think you can illustrate it in the following way. If you are outside on a really sunny day and stick your hand out, it gets warm. You've all had that experience. Now, you've also all had the experience of taking your hand in the kitchen and putting it close to your electric stove or your gas stove. The difference being that it's much hotter. Okay, the solar energy source is very weak, and so you need a lot of surface area to collect it. That's one of the problems. The other problem is storing it. Once you've collected it, how do you store it effectively? Those are the two main reasons. But in addition to solar energy, there are other areas. Biomass, somebody mentioned that. There's a lot of research being done on using garbage to create methane and use that as a source of energy. Geothermal energy is being studied at Los Alamos. Is there anybody that knows what that is? Somebody mentioned it, I think. What?
Ground.
It's underground. You're making use of the energy from beneath the ground. That's right. And here in Washington, hydro energy is a dominant source, a very good source of energy. So those are the renewable energy sources that we have. Now you might wonder what this is. I'm not going to go back to the other graphs, but you have all of these different curves. I will go back a little bit and show you. What there is a line connecting these curves. There's a line here. That's somebody's estimate of how much renewable energy we're going to be using in the future. However, another group says we're going to be using this much. Another group says we're going to be using this much. Another group says we're going to be using this much. Okay. On almost every energy source, it looks like that. Tremendous. And we guessed that it was gasoline, and boy, gasoline, that's about the only transportation source that we have right now. This is how it's used in ships and rail, comparing 73 with 87. Now, there's one thing that you're probably not aware of. I wasn't aware of it until I read the document. If you were to guess, well, I'll ask somebody a question. I'll just ask this question and somebody see if they can answer it. Did we use as much energy for transportation in 1987 as we did in 1973? Remember, 1973 was when we had the oil embargo. What would you guess? Somebody?
Use more now.
This is 1987 now. Do we use more in 1987?
Yeah.
Okay. Why would you say that?
More cars, more everything.
More people? Okay. Anybody disagree?
Yes.
Okay. Why do you disagree?
Because the fuel efficiency of cars has increased.
Mm-hmm.
And the emphasis on car cooling, at least in some areas, increased for a while. It also has swung back. I'm not sure exactly when it swung back.
Right. Okay. In fact, the answer to that really surprised me. We didn't use any more transportation energy in 1987 than we did in 1973. Now that's really surprising, because I would have said the same thing you did. You know, we have more people, we have more cars, we're using planes more. But in fact, you really have impacted the energy use. You, me, people really have had an effect. The use of more efficient cars during that period of time had a dramatic effect on the amount of energy we use. Okay? And so we are participating in that. We need to continue to participate in that process. But I want you to be aware of that, because right now there's a tendency not to care. We need to care.
Is that trend continuing?
No, it's beginning to go up. Why? Again, we're beginning to use more.
Why did that change?
Because people aren't as concerned about the mileage of their cars. That's a basic reason. And we're not making more efficient cars. The other reason it's happened is because a lot of people have old cars that they're unwilling to get rid of. And they're inefficient. Yes?
I think the price of fuel will make a difference too.
Yeah, that could make a difference.
If you raise the price of fuel, people wouldn't use it as much.
From your knowledge, when we're talking about fuel efficiency in cars, there's this thing that you keep hearing, is that the technology exists to go up to somewhere like, 60, 70, 80 miles per gallon, but it's kept under wraps and not used. Is that indeed an accurate statement? You keep hearing it various places. At least I do.
I can't answer it totally, but let me tell you what I think the problem is. The problem isn't the manufacturer. The problem is you. Okay. The reason, and me, the reason is people aren't willing to have a car like that, because there are limitations on a car like that. It doesn't have the power that a car like a Volvo or a car like a Mercury that gets 25 miles a gallon. It doesn't have that kind of power. Okay? And so I believe that you're right. You probably have cars. In fact, I think there are cars on the road in Europe that get 50 miles to a gallon. But they're small cars. Okay? They're not the kind of cars that people are buying right now. And so one of the things I want to get across is that if we're going to change, it's really, we're the ones involved in it doesn't do us any good to blame industry. Yeah.
Who makes those decisions, though? Because I haven't been given the option to buy that car, or even to see it, or to know it exists. And what role do government regulations of the automobile industry play in the fact that cars are getting less efficient?
They do play a role. That's right. And it's an economic kind of situation. And it's a catch-22 situation, as you can imagine. If you disagree with that decision, I think there was a decision made recently, really, again, it's you that has to, you have to write to your congressman and say, look, this is stupid. We don't need to make these restrictions, if you believe that. Okay? Tell them why you feel that way. And if your reason is that we need more efficiency, okay, why? You need more efficiency for many reasons. You want the most efficient car because if it's not efficient, there's waste. The waste means that you're polluting the atmosphere, you're polluting. Okay? CO2 emission, whatever it happens to be. That's true for everything. You want it as efficient as you possibly can to remove the pollution context, burn efficiently, to remove the waste problem, the pollution problem, as much as possible. You want it absolutely as efficient as you can. But there are consequences usually with that. Okay? The other thing that happens, just as it's happening in the schools, is that if you want a car that is efficient and you want a car that also does what you want, you have to do the research and development to do it. How many of you are willing to spend the taxes to do that? How many of you are willing to educate the children to do that? This particular view graph really surprised me too. These are possibilities for alternate fuels. Now, one of the things that I learned that was quite interesting is that in Colorado, the public service company is exploring the possibility of using natural gas as a fuel. And there are cars in Denver that run on natural gas. I wasn't aware of that. I didn't know there was a prototype. Now, so you can have an internal combustion engine that uses petroleum or natural gas. There are difficulties with the car right now in the sense that it can only go about 150 miles before it has to be refueled. It also takes longer to refuel a car with natural gas. The other problem with the cars right now is that because you can't drive up to your service station and pump natural gas, is that you have to have a car that has the capability of using gasoline and natural gas. What does that mean? Well, it means right now is that the efficiency of the engine isn't as high as it could be, because it has to be able to use both kinds of fuel. Natural gas burns very efficiently, so you don't have as much waste associated with it. So that's already happening, but as I said, there's still problems associated with it. Somebody had mentioned electricity. There are electric cars, but typically most of you know that you use a battery, okay? And you can go so far, and then you have to have the battery recharged, or you have to get a new battery. And so there's a lot of work still that needs to be done on electric cars. And the battery is a potential source of lead. It's a potential source of
pollution. Yes, but if they're recycling them, then that's not.
If you recycle them, then it is much less a source of pollution. In the recycling process, you're going to have some pollution also. Okay, but That's right. Recycle it. You can do that.
There's been a lot of research into the different types of batteries which do not involve the lead.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of work being done on that. Smaller size, but more powerful.
Right. Los Alamos, in fact, is involved in batteries. It is developing new kinds of batteries. That's a whole area of possibility also. Hydrogen is another possible area for fuel. That's, you know, farther down the road. I don't believe there's any, but this is developed very far yet.
Yeah.
At least I'm not aware of it. Is there?
Mercedes-Benz and BMW, I believe, also have running cars.
On hydrogen?
Yeah. But their biggest problem is refueling.
Is it?
Yeah. It's
okay.
Complicated task. And then the...
Where do they get their hydrogen, do you know?
I'm not sure. They, well, the what I saw, they have their own little kind of plant thing they're working with, because they want to develop a distribution system too, because they know the, you know, the problem with natural gas and propane.
Right.
Need distribution centers. But, and then there's the problem with, you know, the Hindenburg, you know, they don't want a tank blowing up. People have a phobia
right.
about it, kind of.
That's right.
Doesn't that also use a lot of electrical energy at this point? It really isn't that efficient to produce the hydrogen. You're using up almost as much energy as you're producing.
Okay. That certainly is a possible problem. But that has to be looked at for all of these. What is the waste in actually producing them? What time is it?
And what is biomass?
Biomass is garbage. I mean, that's one of the things. And there you would create methane.
Right.
And use methane to run an engine. And the other thing I didn't mention is you can use ethanol. How many of you are familiar with the artichoke fields up here? See, that was a way of adding to the gasoline, not using as much. So that's another possibility, is a mixture of the two.
In North Dakota, their manufacturing out of green. They have their ethanol plant.
Okay.
But they're not very profitable.
Right. Yeah, I'm aware of that. How about the energy use? This just gives you a feeling for the energy use, you know, how it's used in different areas, like in healthcare as opposed to office care. So are all of you familiar with the pie diagram? Just the size of the pie shape indicates the usage level. So here, these two are the strongest usage levels, warehouse and service area, for commercial energy use. And this tells you what different sources are used, what is electricity, petroleum, natural gas, or coal. This is an indication of the residential energy use. And space heating is a primary use here. And again, you're looking at the different forms of energy used, petroleum and electricity and natural gas. I didn't want to spend too much time on this. People who are interested, these few graphs, let me know if you want to look at this more carefully. But this is industrial energy use, and it divides it up into all the areas. Chemical and petroleum are two major uses of energy in that segment. And again, this breaks it down. Electricity, petroleum, natural gas, and coal. Is this clear, this diagram? Okay, good. And these are all out of the National Energy Strategy. Gives you a feeling for how these different things are used. The final thing is electricity. And here I just wanted to show you, give you a feeling for how it's used in the different areas, residential, commercial, and industrial. You can see that the industrial and residential are about the same for electricity. Well, let me finish by talking about a possible future energy source. And I talked about this last night.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Since you work in that, and since there are a number of places around the country, including one in Austin that works on that fusion research,
mm-hmm.
how do you keep up with what each other is doing? How regularly do you do that? And do you duplicate what each other is doing? Or are you pretty much independent of different tracks and deciding the type of research?
The work that they're doing at Austin is in magnetic confinement fusion. And that isn't, in fact, what I'm involved in at all. I'm involved in something that's called inertial confinement fusion. Very quickly. Let me tell you the difference. Just very quickly. Magnetic confinement, the way to imagine that is to have a bunch of spokes. Imagine we'll be in this shape. Inside that, you have a bunch of marbles. The spokes keep the marbles from going out to a certain extent. I mean, they eventually get out because there's, you know, they can go through the spokes. But it does trap them to some extent. Magnetic confinement has magnetic fields as the spokes. And instead of having marbles, you have a plasma. The magnetic field keeps the plasma in. And what you hope is the plasma stays in there long enough to burn. And the burning process is called fusion. Now, what's the difference between fission and fusion? We have no fusion power plants. Hasn't been proved that you can have a fusion power plant. Hasn't been proved that fusion works. That's why it's a research project. The easiest way to remember, I think, the difference between fission and fusion is to look at my hands. I think this will help. Fission means splitting. You're splitting. So you're splitting uranium. In that splitting process, you release energy. Okay? That's fission. Those are the kind of power plants we have. Fusion means coming together. The deuterium and tritium come together, and in the process of coming together, energy is released. Splitting, fusing. Those are the two differences. So, there's magnetic confinement fusion, and there's inertial confinement fusion. There is some duplication of magnetic confinement fusion, but not very much. Magnetic confinement fusion is being done in Europe in a cooperative effort with the United States and Japan. And so it's almost a world project right now. Inertial confinement fusion is a situation where you have a ball that you blow up on the outside, basically. So you have matter that gets very hot, like so hot, as I was talking about yesterday, 1,000,000 degrees, 10 million degrees, and it blows up like this, and like an airplane that spits gas this way, the airplane goes this way. So you get a rocket kind of effect. And in the fusion pellet, you have gas blowing out this way, and you have matter collapsing like this and getting very dense. And the energy in the fusion process in the inertial confinement case occurs very fast. As I was telling people yesterday, it occurs in 1/1,000,000,000 of a second. So it's like a tiny star exploding. And you do this 10 times a second, or 1 times a second, so it's like an engine, a car engine, bang, 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 bang. So it's very different than magnetic confinement. The fuel for fusion energy is deuterium, which is heavy water. It's a source of energy that would be available to almost every nation on Earth that has water. And that's why I'm working in it, is I think that it's a source of energy that could be available for thousands of years for people.
Salt water?
Yeah, salt water too. I believe, anyway. I'm sure there's deuterium in salt water too. Yeah. The oceans would be a source of it. So that's a possible future source of energy, a future source that could be used for thousands of years, and not confined to a particular nation or a few nations. But it's going to take a long time before we actually develop it.
How about heat pumps?
Solar heat pumps? Or what?
I don't think they're solar.
No, geothermal.
Geothermal heat pumps? The problem with geothermal energy, of course, is that it's in isolated areas. Okay? And as a result of that, it's limited, just as hydropower is. It's limited to those areas where you can actually use it. Solar energy is something I talked about earlier. I think solar energy has a lot of potential, but we still have a long ways to go with that, just as we do with fusion energy. I think that we should be doing a lot of research in that area that we're not doing.
Well, there are actually some places that are installations where that is being used.
Oh, sure.
We're nowhere near that as far as fusion is concerned.
Well, I'm really glad that there was people that came. Are there any questions? I think that let me say one thing before I ask for questions again. The other reason that I presented this is that I'd really like to be able to explore what the risks are. People are afraid of risk in our society right now. There's risk associated with all of these energy sources. Fusion, oil, coal, gas, all of them. You need to understand what those risks are so you can better evaluate what we should do. And it's you. I really believe you. Some people don't think they have any power, but that's not true. You really do. One person can do a tremendous amount. And so I hope that you think about that. Anyway, questions?
Yes, I have a question.
Sure.
In regard to the letter there from George Bush.
Oh.
Opinion. Is that just showcasing? I don't believe his request and his budget included one penny for energy research. Am I correct?
No, it does, because in fact, I'm involved in inertial confinement fusion, which is partly energy research, and our budget is probably about $160 million. I mean, it's not anything compared to what it costs to build one of these special planes. That's a problem. But there's money in inertial confinement fusion. There has been a decline of the money available for magnetic confinement fusion, which is a big mistake. In fact, magnetic confinement was cut about $50 million last year, which had severe consequences for the program. But that's still being funded at about $250 million a year.
Okay, I have another question. According to your your graph there, transportation use 7387. The graph did not agree with what you said. That our use was less in 87. It was less.
No, it was about the same.
It was less for automobiles. But all sources together added up to several million barrels a day increased use in 87.
Okay. Well, that could have been a mistake on my part. I didn't look at the graph. What I was doing was reading the text, and I don't remember whether it was automobiles.
The thing that I was wondering is, given what the government is doing right now, is this a realistic expectation that we're going to achieve some kind of energy independence? You know, some place in the foreseeable future?
No, unfortunately not. The reason I say that is that you have to have more restrictions on the automobile, for example, automobile usage, the efficiency of automobiles. There isn't nearly enough money put into research right now. I mean, I told you that there's research in my area, but you need more research in all of these areas. For example, in coal, in oil, all of these areas need much more research than they're doing.
There was, back in the early 80s, late 70s, money available for developing residential reduction of energy use,
of
alternative energy sources, and those things have all been phased out. That's one of the reasons why I really question how dedicated our administration is really to developing a strategy for decreasing energy demand or use of alternative energy.
I think that, I don't know how to answer that. I think that in fact they are concerned about it. You should read the document. I think that the difficulty is that the issues are very complex. I mean, you're not just talking about energy efficiency, different forms of energy, but the Bush administration, and I think any kind of person that looks at the thing in its total complexity finds that he's in a bind, in a sense. One of the things that you worry about is the economy. Now you're trying to figure out what is the best thing for the economy, for industry, and balance that with what is the best thing for efficiency, and bringing yourself to a situation where you're free of, for example, the oil imports. What is the best thing to do scientifically? What things do you need to finance? Which things can you finance? So you're balancing all of these issues at the same time and trying to figure out what you can do that is going to work and doesn't have a dramatic impact on the nation. That's hard, as you would imagine. But that's a flavor that you get when you go through, forget about the strategy. I mean, just go through all of the input information, the interterm report, and you see this, all of this stuff coming from every direction you can think of that you're trying to figure out how to handle. Now, I guess I personally would say the president hasn't got enough guts. You know, that that what's needed is that we really need to push these things hard.
And unfortunately, the success in the war is not going to add any impetus toward alternative energy development.